Welcome to Deeply Rooted, a web series on mindset. My name is Tony Wisdom, aka Tony Gaines. I've spent over 20 years in the music business as a producer, engineer, label owner, and executive. This show is dedicated to changing the narrative on success. I reached out to the most successful people I know. I want to know what drives them, their greatest mistakes, their best advice, their secrets to success, and how all of that has shaped who they are today. Take a journey with us. All right. How y'all doing out there? Deeply Rooted, Season 2, Episode 5. Hold on, let me get you on. Let me get you on camera right quick. There he is. I didn't have you up there. With the brother Demetrius Kipp, man. Obviously, it's Mother's Day. So, you know, to all the wonderful, beautiful mothers, thank you. You know, what more can be said than that? I mean, you got us through our snotty nose and our pissy pants and got us to where we are, you know. So thank you to my mother. Thank you. So here we are with the brother Demetrius. I'm sure you have something, you know. We can get into it later, but if, you know, this, if you want to say something to your mother, you're more than welcome, bro.
Yeah, well, you know, like you said, man, it's Mother's Day, and, you know, we don't get to celebrate our mothers enough, and, you know, I just want to send a happy Mother's Day out to all the mothers out there. Just want to, you know, give you that encouragement. Hey, keep doing what you're doing. You know, your kids going to turn out great. You know, I mean, me and Tony both had strong moms, and I feel like we turned out real good. So stay encouraged and just, you know, do what you got to do to make life better for your kids and you. That's how we work.
No doubt. Okay, so just before we jump into the interview, could you give me a little background on who you are professionally, what you're out here doing in the community?
Okay, well, yeah. So I'm from Alabama. I'm from Birmingham, Alabama. I moved here back in December 1st, 1999. That was my first day in Kansas.
Okay.
I was in the Army, and I got out and married a girl from Lawrence, and we moved here, and, you know, and I've been here ever since. But, you know, I've had a few professions that I was really, like, I really loved. I loved my Army career. And after Army career, I went into some criminal justice and some law stuff, and I worked at a couple of juvenile detention centers, and then I realized that I was more interested in helping juvenile criminals reform, and because I knew I had a better opportunity of helping them turn it around as opposed to an adult.
Okay.
And I worked in both of those fields. I worked in the adult side and the juvenile side. And, you know, like I said, it's hard to turn a guy that's been committing crimes for 30 years. And, you know, he's the age of my dad. He could be my dad. So what can I teach him?
Yep.
But when I got a 14 or 15-year-old kid, hey, man, I got a lot of stories for you. Yep. I can show you. I can tell you how this is going to turn out. So I knew then that my true area of expertise, my true field, what I really loved was going to be working with kids.
Okay.
And so I stuck with that. I went from juvenile detention to high schools here in Lawrence, Kansas. I'm at Free State High School right now, but I originally came to Lawrence High, and then they needed my help over at Free State, so I moved over here. And I guess I'm kind of a, what do they call it, a fire lion. I'm both. I'm a firebird and a lion.
Okay.
It's funny because I can be both of them because I'm not from here, so I can root for both.
No doubt.
It's tough because, you know, like, I spent my first 6 or 7 years at Lawrence High, and then I've been over here the last 4 years. And I got to watch all my kids from Lawrence High graduate. This is my last class right now. The seniors right now in the last class, they were the freshmen when I came, well, when I came over here. So I consider them my kids. So I root for them and I support them in everything they do. I go to sporting events and, you know, show up at parties and graduation stuff. But but outside of that, so what I do around Lawrence is where I grew up in Alabama, it was pretty rough. Birmingham was a rough part of town, a rough city. And so I got to see a whole lot of stuff that I didn't really like. I realized at an early age that I couldn't take seeing kids hungry or without clothes or, you know, no Christmas and no Thanksgiving. And I just knew from a small age, man, I remember giving half my Christmas toys away to a family of kids that didn't have nothing.
Yeah.
And my mom walked in one day and was like, "Hey, where is this stuff at?" And I was like, "What? What stuff?" So I'm trying to play like I don't know what she's talking about. And then she looks up and see this kid walking with my shirt on. Mm-hmm. And she was like, so she sat me down and asked me about it. And I told her, and she said, "Well, okay." She said, "That's fine. I'm proud of you for doing that." She said, "But you gotta make sure you take care of you." Mm. And I remember, and we talked about this. Me and my mom talked about this. But I remember telling her, "Well, I'm fine. I got enough for me, but they don't have anything."
Yeah.
And from that point on, my mom would tell me all the time. She's like, "When you told me that, and you was 7 or 8 years old," she's like, "I knew then it was gonna be something else about you." Mm. And just from that day, man, I had that fight in me, you know, that will to just always try to help somebody that couldn't help themselves.
That's awesome.
You know, and a lot of people think about that, man, and they just, you know, I don't want to say people are selfish, but we got that knack and that urge to always want to take care of ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, and I get, hey, I can't help somebody else if I'm not in a position where I can do it.
Yeah.
You have to self-preserve, but you don't have to be selfish when you do it.
Yeah. I like to say it's like a bank account, right? If you have $1 million in the bank, right, and you're constantly making withdrawals, 100,000 here, 100,000 there, eventually it's going to be gone. It's going to be $0, right?
Yeah.
If you're not putting deposits in, right? Because you got to also make deposits on top of that. And in this case, deposits are, you know, self-care, making sure that you're okay, because you can't help anybody, you know what I'm saying, if you're not okay. It's like when you're on an airplane and they give you the warnings and they say, if the mask drops down, right?
Exactly.
You put it on you first. Yep. Then you get the people around you. You know, so I love that, man. And, you know, I'll share a story about, because you were at YCAT at one point in time, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I was in YCAT 17 years old. And honestly, man, my life could have went either way. And I'm not going to sit here and act like YCAT changed, like I got out and I was a changed guy, because I wasn't. But something happened to me in YCAT. At the high school, they had what they call a career development class, right? It was one of the classes we had to take. You learn how to, you know, balance a checkbook and, you know, fill out applications. And one day we watched a bunch of videos from trade schools, right? So it was like equestrian and motorcycle and airplane, aeronautics repair. And then I'll never forget, it was like one of those moments in the movies, like on Blues Brothers, man, when they were in the church and the light started shining down from heaven and you heard, ha, because they put on this video from this school called Full Sail in Orlando. It was a music school. I was heavily into music, but until that very second, it never crossed my mind one time that I could do it as a job, right? I wasn't conscious of studios and things like that, you know? So we had this staff member who, and back then, I don't know how it was when you were there, but I had a call list, and I couldn't call, but only the people that were on my call list, my mama, my grandma, whoever, right? And I had written down the number, and all I wanted was that catalog, man, call this number and have them send me the information. And Mr. Joe, that was his name, he was like, man, I can't do it. Like I can't, you know, whatever, for whatever reason. But then he went home that night and called from the house, and I ended up getting that package in YCAT, and I read that catalog front to back until I got out of there. Now, I didn't end up going to Full Sail. I ended up enrolling. I ended up paying tuition and was getting ready to go, but, you know, we had one of those epic Lawrence nights, and I didn't make it. You know what I'm saying? And it was unfortunate, but that led me to being here and having to learn and teach myself music, and you know what I'm saying? And then years later, I did end up getting a bachelor's degree from Full Sail. Not for music, for something else, but you know, like all of that started in YCAT. And my point to say that is like see, someone like you being there, you don't know, like Mr. Joe didn't know how much him going home and calling and getting me that catalog actually changed my life. Like, because it did. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So hats off to you and everybody. Mr. Joe, you know what I'm saying? Wherever you are, you know, I really appreciate dudes like you, man, that take that time. And all he had to do was just have a little damn compassion and see in my eyes that I was sincere. You know, I wasn't trying to run a hustle, you know, and he had the presence to recognize that. So anyway, okay, so let's get into this, brother.
Okay.
Who is Demetrius Kemp, the person? How would you describe yourself?
Wow. man, that's a very good question. It's always tough for me to talk about myself, but I'm getting better at it because people tell me you need to do more of it. So here we go. I am, first off, I'm a black man fighting a battle to help other young black men and young black women to get back to the point to where we respect ourselves. Okay. We respect our people, and we respect our elders. I mean, I just look at how we talk to people now, man, and how I listen to kids at school and just out in the streets, how they talk to people. Especially like their grandparents and their parents. Mm-hmm. Man, my mom would tore my mouth off if I would have said some of the stuff these people say. No doubt. So I'm that person that's going to stand between that kid and somebody that can possibly hurt that kid or ruin that kid's life. I'm the guy, I'm the buffer in between.
Okay.
You know, I take all the hits so this kid can have a better life. You know, I go out there and talk to people and, you know, try to fix stuff so we can give them that better life, that, you know, give them that education they need. Also, I'm that guy that's going to get out there and I see like a family struggling. Hey, look, it's not going to always be given to you, but if I got it, you can have it. Now, I don't want you to give me anything back in return. I want you to see what I do every day. And then I want you to say to yourself, I can do that. Mm. And then go do it.
No doubt.
I don't want any praise. I don't want any, you know, kudos or any awards or any of that. Mm-hmm. I would just want people to see what we do and say, oh my God, I can do that too.
Yeah. That's called being the change, brother.
Yeah, you know? That's it. Man, I'm going to hit you guys with a little story. About 4 years ago, I do this Thanksgiving and Christmas basket giveaway. And I was leaving Lawrence High School. And it was one day, it was just a long, horrible day. And I was so mad. And then I don't even know what I was mad about, but I know I was in a bad mood. So I'm waiting to leave the parking lot, and this car passes me by. And the car slows down, and I go around the car because I needed to go to the gas station. So I pull up at the quick shop at 19th and Mass. And right as I pull up, my phone rings. So I answer the phone, but I stay in the car. So this little kid walks out in front of my car, and she's going to inside the quick shop. And it just sticks out to me because it was just so matter of fact. Uh-huh. And so I sit on the phone, I get off, and I go in and pay for my gas. And as I'm paying for the gas, the cashier says, "Oh, sir, your daughter already came in here and paid for your gas." And I was like, "What?" And she's like, "Yeah." She's like, "A little girl just came in here and paid for your gas." And I said, "Wait a minute." I said, "Oh, man, she must have put it on the wrong pump." Hmm. So I run out to the car, and I said, "Ma'am," I said, "I think your daughter put the gas on the wrong pump." And the lady looked at me, and she's like, "No, she put it on the right pump." Hmm. I said, "No, she put it on the pump my pump." And the lady kind of smiled, and she's like, "Yeah, that's what she wanted to do." And I look at the lady, and I'm like, "What?" The little girl says to me, she's like, "Hey, do you not remember me?" And when a kid says that to you, even if you don't remember her, you have to say yes. Mm-hmm. So I said yes, and just the look on her face when I said yes, I had no clue who she was. Mm. But then the mom, I looked at the mom, and it rung a bell with me with her face. And I said, "Okay." I knew it had to have been either Christmas or Thanksgiving. Mm. And so I asked the little girl, I said, "So how are you?" I said, why'd you want to buy me gas? And she said, "You gave me food, you gave me clothes, you gave me toys." And she said, "I just wanted to give you some back." And I said, "What?" So I look at the mom, and the mom says, "You helped us a couple Christmas ago." And I was like, "Oh." I said, "Well, how did you know it was me?" And she said, "It's so funny. We was driving down 19th Street, and my daughter just popped up. Mom, there he is. There's that man. There he goes." And she said, I was like, "What?" And she's like, "That's when I kind of swerved over to the side of the road for you to pass me." And she's like, "We just followed you here. And once you parked at the pump, we knew you was going to get gas. So she wanted to pay for your gas."
No.
And I'm like, "Wow." I said, "Well, I can't let you pay for my gas." And the little girl's like, "Well, it's too late. I already did it." So I look at her and I said, "Hey, you know what? I like ice cream. Do you like ice cream?" And she says, "I love ice cream." I said, "Okay, guess what? There's a Dairy Queen right there." I said, "Since you paid for my gas, can I go pay for your ice cream?" And she said, "Yes." And just was so happy. Well, we go over there and we sit down and we eat ice cream. And this little girl is just so, man. So where we're going with this is that right there, just that's the only reward I would take.
Yeah.
You know, if that little kid 2 years after the fact spots me in traffic and can say, "Hey, that's the guy. We need to pay him back for that." And then just, you know, just mom having the heart to say, "Yes, let's do it."
Well, see, brother, that's right. Goes right back to what you were saying when you were describing who you are, right? And
yeah,
you said you just want to do so that people can see the example and maybe they will do, right?
Yeah.
And in that little girl, she saw the example a couple years ago. It stuck with her. It didn't leave to the point to where your face stuck with her. And she caught you in traffic. And that affected her mother so much, right, that she took money out of her pocket, because obviously it's not the little girl's money. You know what I'm saying? And that right there is how you change the world. Right? And I'm talking to the viewers right now. Like that's how you change the world. One act of kindness, one act of selfless giving, authentic giving, where you're not expecting anything back, That yep. right there, the way you felt in that moment, Kip, when you're sitting there eating that ice cream, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's the same way all of us feel when we give something and or when we give authentically or when we receive authentically, right?
Yes.
And see, if you spent the majority of your time or all of your time doing that, not you, but us, if we did that, right, then we would always be in that moment. And how can you have a better life being in that moment, sitting there eating that ice cream with that little girl because of the right choices that you made? Like that's really what it's about, you know? Which leads me to this next question. How do you define success?
Okay. So my definition of success is going to be different from what a lot of people think. Most people think success means it has to be some type of personal gain for them. You know, I can buy a house. I can buy a new car. I can do this. I can do that. That's fine. And that's, you know, that's what you should be, everybody should be striving for that. But success for me would be, you know, encouraging some kid to say, I can do this, man. I can graduate from high school and then go do it. You know, some mom that's struggling. Hey, I got this fresh breath of air. Let me get it together. I got kids that's depending on me. I got a family I got to take care of. So that gives them that extra fight. That's success to me. You know, a single dad out there that's fighting to take care of his family. Same thing. I mean, you know, that's success to me. That fight that those parents put out to take care of their kids, their families. You know, and it can go from anywhere. I mean, it don't just have to be your family, you know, your friends. My success has been, you know, every project I've worked on has been successful because, you know, we got people out there that's willing to help. I mean, man, this whole COVID-19 thing, man, I was so scared about being able to feed people for the holidays. Mm. Man, I had people from all over the world. All over the world, Tom. When I tell you people was calling me from other countries,
yeah,
there was people that, you know, people that I met in the military or people that I met in college. And these guys were all over the world. And they were reaching back to me saying, hey, man, are you doing your Christmas thing? Are you doing a Thanksgiving thing? I'm like, yeah. And they're like, okay, hey, we want to help. You know, I got these friends. And, man, this the last Christmas and Thanksgiving was huge. Hmm. We helped, man, we helped twice as many people as we helped over the last couple of years.
Wow.
And, you know, and it was just... And that's why I always tell people, man, that everybody always feels like the world's out for themselves. Uh-huh. If you can show people the hurt, the hardship, if you can show them that stuff, somewhere along their path, they've dealt with it. They've seen it, you know, and they're going to be willing to help you. A buddy of mine wrote a post a couple weeks ago,
okay. And
it said, basically, you will get more help from a poor person than you will from a rich person.
Absolutely.
And when I read that, he was asking the question, why is it like that?
Mm.
And my response to him was, because that poor person knows what it's like to not have.
Hmm.
So they don't want to see that on anybody else.
Yeah.
So that person will go out and help when they don't have much to give, you know? Hmm. And a lot of people think it's all about giving money. Man, you know what's more important than money sometimes?
Hmm.
Is time.
Yep.
If you give somebody that time, when they sit back and think about this, you know, hey, man, these guys came out here and helped me paint my house. Or these guys took the time to come out here and help me, you know, clean up my yard. Or, you know, they went and shopped for my mom when she was sick. That's way more important than money sometimes, man. And,
well, you know, let me add a perspective to that. Because, so, when you're of lower income, right? And say you have two families living next to each other, one, you know, two single moms, and one mom, check's not coming for a couple days, but she needs a couple eggs and she needs some sugar and she might need a ride to work. So she goes and asks the next door neighbor, the mom, and you know, she gets what she needs. See, for lower income people, community is your resource, right? Yes. So it becomes your spending power. Your relationships become your spending power. So if my car breaks down, you know, and the next door neighbor's uncle is a shade tree mechanic, but he needs something that I have, you know. And see, people tend to see that as a weakness, but they don't really realize that that is a strength. That's how things are supposed to be. Community's supposed to take care of each other. You know what I'm saying? You're not supposed to put yourself into crippling debt. You know what I'm saying? So that's why a poor person to me is willing to give way before a wealthy person, is because that their currency is built in relationships, and that $5 today can turn into the $10 that I need tomorrow. You know what I'm saying? So community is very important. But I just wanted to add that little caveat to it. So how has a failure or an apparent failure set you up for later success?
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, I've had a lot of failures in life, man. As much as people don't want to believe that, I'm probably saying, "What? Not you?" Yes, me. Definitely me. I was never always as smart and wise as I am now. It took me years to get all this knowledge and get all this wisdom. So like I've had tons of failed relationships. I had a failed marriage. If I knew then what I know now, I'd probably still be married. But you know, you go through those things because you have to build yourself. So in those failed relationships, I now know how to communicate. And I'm not just talking about talking, I'm talking about listening. I'm talking about listening to understand instead of listening to respond. So I learned how to communicate. That's going to fix a lot of the failures. Communication is going to fix a lot of my failures. I learned how to be patient. I've learned how to ask for what I want. I learned how to realize what I need and go get it. So all of my failures have put me in that phase of life. You know, I now know whatever I want to do, I go do it. You know, if I need help, I know who to go talk to. I've figured out how to research on my own, so I don't have to ask people, hey, what do you think about this? No, hey, look, this is what I want to do. This is what I need to do. This is what you have. This is what you can offer me. This is what I need from you. So I'm confident with that part of my life now. But that all started because of my failures.
No doubt. Okay, this is one of my favorite questions. All right. If you could have one gigantic billboard anywhere with anything on it, what would it say and why?
Wow. man, that's... Let's see. What would I...
Now, this one comes out of nowhere, so we can skip forward, come back to it. I'll let you take it.
Okay. I got you.
Okay.
All right. So where I would go with that is, in life, you can't forget your value or your worth. And the reason behind that is because once you forget that, you don't know what you deserve. You don't know what you're worth. You don't know your value. Mm. So.
I love that, man.
That's what, that. Yeah, that would be my billboard.
Hard stop. Bow. I like that. So, what is one of the best or most worthwhile investments you've ever made? Could be an investment of money, time, energy, etc.
Man, you know, I got a million answers to that question. And I'm going to give you one in particular.
Okay.
Anything I do with kids. Anything I do with kids. If I do some, you know, some function out in the community and I get kids involved, seeing the effect that has on kids is mind blowing. And man, it teaches them something that nobody can ever take from them. Nobody can take that. I had some kids come out when we did one of the Thanksgiving giveaways a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And these were some kids from Free State, so they had never seen that part of life. Hmm. And one of the girls came up to me, and she had tears in her eyes. And she said, Mr. D, she said, that lady that was just hugging you, she's like, she was crying. And she said, all you said to her was, hey, look, we don't always have the answers. But when we do, we have to share them with everybody. Hmm. And she said, that lady, that made her cry even more. But she hugged you and she said, thank you, and she left. That girl said to me, she's like, I never really thought about this. She said, but my parents and me and my siblings are, we could easily be one day away from that life. Hmm. And I looked at her. And like I said, she had tears in her eyes. And I said, so what do you think? I said, how do you fix it? And she said, wow. She's like, I don't know how we fix it. She said, but this is a really good start. She said, anytime you're doing something like this, she's like, I want to be involved. And she's like, I want to bring my friends because none of us even think about this. None of us think about people. She's like, we see people every day at school, and we never even think, you know, how's that person's life outside of school? Mm-hmm. Or how's that person's life when they leave this place?
Yeah.
She's like, we never think about it because our parents, we're, you know, I don't want to say we're rich, but we're comfortable enough that I never have to have the thoughts that most of these people in this room have.
Yeah.
And man, I looked at this kid. This kid was a sophomore in high school. Mm. And she said that to me. And just the rest of that day, man, just the, you know, as I looked around that room and I watched all these kids, and it was kids from Lawrence High, Free State, you know, Central, Southwest, West. It was some elementary kids in there. Mm. And they had more fun than anybody. You know, watching these kids run around with boxes of macaroni, putting them in laundry baskets to give to people.
Yeah.
Man, you know, you give a kid that, and that builds something in that kid, man. And that's the one thing I'm most proud of, you know.
No doubt. And you should be. Because it's not helping the kid, it's not helping you, it's not helping the family. This shit is helping the world, brother.
Yes.
Like that's helping the world. And again, you know, it's another reason why, you know, I had to have you on this show. is because it's one of, you know, you may not see it, you know, but and until, you know, with Willie D passing recently, man, like even myself being front and center and watching what bro was doing, I didn't realize it. You know what I'm saying? Like, because when you're in the middle of the fight, you just see the punches coming at you and you're ducking and trying to, you know, but like you don't actually see the art of it, man. So I definitely want to take my hat off to you. Like, you're one of the shining examples in our community, bro. And thank you for that. You know, thank from me, but also from all of us. I'm speaking for all of us, and I know I can. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So thank you for that. And these are great stories that you're using to make your point. Like, I don't know if you're doing that intentionally, but these are all driving home your point very well. So,
you know, I want to give people examples, and, you know, so when they hear me talking about stuff, man, they're like, wait a minute, this guy, he really does. He gets out there and he sees this and he does this and, you know, he gets these results and, you know, so, yeah. But yeah, man. And then, man, you're right, man. On Willie D, man, shit, I'm gonna miss that dude, man.
No doubt.
I mean, I run into that cat, you know, some of the places, man, and we talk. And man, just, you know, the few times that I've had to sit down with him and pick his brain, and he picked my brain.
Yeah.
And you know, that was an awesome cat, man. And I remember telling him, man, you ever need me, brother, I'm there.
Yeah.
And you know, just, you know, being here now without him, man, it's like, you know, wow, where do we go from here?
No doubt.
But we picking it up, man. We'll pick it up.
And when you watch this back, you'll see that my overlay on the show is a pink basketball texture. That's been all season. We've been rocking that for Willie D all season. So, but you... Again, you're one of those dudes for us, you know. Like Lawrence, we've had our handful that I can remember, you know, being a young black youth here. We've had our handful of effective leaders, bro. Like really, you know, you had Dane Floyd, you had Sean P, you know, and a few other, Willie D. There's a few others that I can think of, you know, but like, you're one of those dudes. So, how about this? Let's get on to the other side of this.
Okay.
In the last 5 years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life?
New belief or habit. Wow, that's a good one, man. New belief. Well, I don't know if it's really a new belief, but I've always felt like if we spent more time talking to our kids and explaining to them, you know, life, like, you know, so. I had a conversation a week ago with a white friend of mine, and he asked me, he said, man, what do you think is the difference between my kids and your kids? And I looked at him and I was like, what are you talking about? He said, black kids and white kids. And so I asked him, I said, have you ever talked to your kids about when they leave the house, you know, how they should act when they're out? And he's like, well, yeah, I always tell my kids, you know, to be respectful. I said, okay, but that's it. And he looked at me and he's like, yeah. He's like, that's what I worry about the most, is they're going to be out there not doing what they're supposed to do. I said, okay, so that's the difference right there. You have to tell your kids one thing. I have to tell my kids 30 different things. I have to tell my kids how to interact with anybody, how they need to interact with other black people, how they need to interact with white people, how they need to interact with the police, how they need to interact when they walk into a store, you know, it's just anywhere. I said, because life is different from my kids than it is from your kids. I said, 10 of your kids can be somewhere and it's fine. 2 of my kids are somewhere and it's a problem.
No doubt.
I said, so that's the difference between my kids and your kids. And I said, until we figure out how to get past that, life's never going to be the same. And he said, wow. He said, man, really? He's like what? I said, man, let me ask you this. I said, the difference between me and you. I said, when you're driving down the street, what do you think if you see a cop? Nothing. He's like, I just keep driving. I said, okay, so you know what I do? I said, when the cop passes me, if he's going the other way, as soon as he passes me, I'm looking in my rearview mirror. I haven't done anything. I'm not worried that something in my past is going to come up. But all my life, I've been taught that I need to watch them.
Yeah.
I said, so that's how my life goes every day. I said, when I walk into Dylan's, I look around, like I'm very observant of my surroundings. And I see people grab their purses, people pull their kids closer to them. You know, people are always kind of side-eyeing me. And I, in my head, now being who I am, I kind of giggle to myself about that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make it fair or fun or easy. Huh. It doesn't make it, you know, it still bugs me a little bit, but not to the fact that it ruins my day.
Yeah.
I look at it now, like I said, I can look at it now and laugh about some of it. And in my head, I'm thinking to myself, lady, it ain't nothing on your body or your person or in your purse that I want, that I don't already have. So,
well, that leads me to, I'm going to share another story from YCAT because it just led me to something else powerful that I learned in YCAT. But the overall gist of it is, in things like those little microaggressions, right, I realize that it's not my problem. It's your problem, right? Mm-hmm. Like you, there's something about life or about me or about culture that you don't understand, and you lack knowledge, and you're not actively trying to seek it, or you wouldn't be behaving in such a way, right? Because right here is a learning opportunity that you're not taking. So I'm seeing all of these things, and I say, you know what? Just because you have this issue, you have a problem. Be it racism or whatever it is, I don't have to make your problem my problem just because you want me to, right?
Exactly.
So, and that's, but the story from YCAT, when I came out of Cheyenne, which was, used to have this orientation cottage, and you had to be there for like 4 to 6 weeks when you first got there, before they let you out into open campus, right? So when they put me into open campus, now I'm there early 90s, right? So the gang banging and the carjacking problem in Wichita, Kansas City, Topeka was extreme. So that's mostly what is in there when I'm in there. But I'm from Lawrence, and there's only one other dude in there from Lawrence, and the gangs and all of that just ain't gonna work for us, you know? So we're kind of solo dolo in there besides just me and him, right? So when they put me, I got put in Cherokee, they put me in a four-man dorm, and they put me with, I shit you not, 3 skinheads, right? The guy that was the leader on the whole campus, right? And then his little soldier dude, and then this little wannabe dude that was just starting to get into it. Well, the leader dude, his name was Brian, he would never talk to me. Not only am I considered black, but I'm mixed, so I'm almost worse than a black. You know what I'm saying? So this dude wouldn't talk to me for probably a couple months, man. He wouldn't, we live in the same room. His bed's right next to me. He wouldn't acknowledge me, nothing. Which, whatever, do your thing. Well, we had a a cottage meeting, like a house meeting, and there had been an issue where we were about to get a group fine, but it was a black dude who did it, but nobody wanted to say it, and you know, but it was just a right versus wrong thing, and I just stood up for right, and I kind of went against the blacks, which I wasn't supposed to do that, you know what I'm saying? But it was the right thing to do, and they couldn't get mad at me because they knew I was right. So anyway, after that, I noticed this dude start talking to me. And after about a month, me and this guy, like, when we would go to bed at night, we would lay there and we would talk heavy, heavy shit. And I wouldn't judge this dude. I was just trying to get him to understand that maybe some of the beliefs that you have are wrong. And have you ever considered this? Or have you ever... And I got to spend a couple months really, like, without judgment, having conversations with this dude. He would tell me what his issues were with, you know, well, black people do this. And I'd be like, nah, that's not really right, you know? So, in the end, I played on the basketball team. I was gone one night. They had done snacks. They were going to bed. I had to shower real quick, get my snack, and then... you know, whatever. So I seen a note on my desk. I didn't think nothing of it. I go to the shower, take my shower, come back, lay down. The dude, soon as the lights go off, this Brian cat jumps up and he starts beating the little wannabe dude up, beating him bad. Then he beat him all the way down to the staff. All right. And I never saw Brian again. But then I read that letter, and essentially, just from being present and just from, you know, not judging this dude and having a conversation, I changed that man's views, and he quit that gang. And the way he quit that gang was by beating dude up and going to close cottage, and you know, like that was his way of doing it. And I still have this letter to this day, he thanked me for that, man. And at that point, I realized, man, you know what? Sometimes, like you said, communication sometimes is all we need. You know, we're all fundamentally the same. We all fundamentally want the same things. We all love our mother. We all want what's best for our kids. We all want to live well. We all want to have fun with our friends. You know what I'm saying? It's like this. We have more similarities than we have differences, but people choose to focus on the differences, which is strange to me. So, but anyway, I'm sorry that took so long. I really, that little time in Wildcat was powerful for me, man. It really was. I learned a lot of valuable lessons in there, man.
Oh, yeah.
What advice would you give to a smart, driven kid about to enter the real world? I asked this today in the group.
Okay. I would tell that kid... do what you love and okay, let me rephrase that. I would tell that kid to promote and produce the stuff that you love most. The stuff that you hate, you got to let it go. You can't focus on that. If you focus on the stuff you hate, you're going to forget about the stuff you love. Mm.
Love it.
That's it.
Great advice.
Yes.
So, I think we kind of discussed this already, but what's your life mission? What impact do you want to leave on the world?
Well, you know, man... one of the things my mom used to tell me all the time, man, because she used to see how I would get, before I got that patience that I'm talking about so much, I would get so eager, so, you know, so frustrated with stuff not going the way I wanted it to go, or, you know, just impatient, basically. Like, you know, we all do it. But one of the things my mom used to say to me is she used to always tell me, you can't be everything for everyone. Uh-huh. And I, you know, and it, man, as crazy as that sounds, it took me about 20 years to realize what she was saying to me. And once I figured that out, man, life got different for me. My patience got better. I got wiser because I started looking at stuff and listening to, you know, listening to people. Like, most of my life, man, I spent around older people. Like, it was all, I was always in the crowd of people that was older than me. And the reason that was is because you don't get smart or you don't get that wisdom listening to people that's younger than you or in the same boat with you, because they can't teach you anything that you don't know. Man, I used to get in trouble because I would be late for school every day. But I would leave home probably an hour before school started. And they finally got my mom, and they was like, how is he late every day? So my mom followed me to school one day, and I didn't know it. But every morning, man, I would go to school, and I would stop in the alley on the way to school. And these old guys would be out there playing dominoes. That's how I learned how to play dominoes also. But I would stop and I would sit there with those guys, and they would talk and they'd joke and everything. And they'd always run me off to go to school. But just in that little time of sitting there talking to them, man, the wisdom and the knowledge I picked up helped me along the way in life, man. Because everything I learned in life by listening, I've seen it happen. So when it happens, boom, I've already seen this. I know what the outcome gonna be for this.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I don't, I mean, I don't, is it, does that answer your question?
I mean, yeah. With the whole interview pretty much answered that question. You know, I mean, you know, you're on a quest, man, you know, to be an example, to teach, to be a teacher, to, you know, to be a mentor. So absolutely. So how about this? When you feel overwhelmed or unfocused or have lost your focus temporarily, what do you do?
Man, that used to be the time where I would actually, that would be the time one or two things was going to happen if I was ever in that point. My mom, and I, to this day, I don't know how she knew. But that lady called me. I talked to my mom every day. But whenever I was sad, like mad or sick, she always called. I don't know how she always knew, but she always called at those times, man.
Yeah.
And whenever I had an issue like that, that something that just bugged me or just took me down that path, she was the one I called, man.
Yeah.
And now, you know, now without her, I just, you know, I try to sit back and think about it. Like, I put more thought into what we can do to fix the problem, or what, you know, what do I need to back off of, or do I need to back off, or do I need to push this, or, you know. So whenever I get to a situation where I don't know, I always reach out to somebody that I think might have an answer. And, man, I talk to 15 people just to hear what I need to do. You know, and it's always going to be somebody that I trust their word. I'm not going to call somebody and just say, oh, yeah, you should do this, and then I just go do that.
Yeah.
I might talk to 10 people.
Yeah.
You know, but, yeah, I feel like I surround myself with a lot of like people to myself. I feel like any of my friends that I, you know, anybody that I can call on, they're not going to give me something that's going to harm me or what I want to do.
Yeah.
So.
I like that, man. That's, yeah. And you know what's dope about that is you're such a giver. And for most people that are givers, it's hard to be a receiver. You know what I'm saying? But
yeah,
you seem to seek that out when you need it, which that's dope. I'm glad that you got people like that, you know, like, because not everybody has people like that. So
yeah,
that's really dope. Okay. Do you have a favorite song or a song that you think it would say is the soundtrack to your life?
Oh man, soundtrack to my life. Let's see. I don't know, man. I never really thought about that. There's tons of there's a lot of music that I like, and a lot of music I can relate to. Probably one of the most relaxing pieces of music to me is Louis Armstrong. I heard that cat a lot in my house growing up. B.B. King, a lot of that old school blues and, you know, jazz and stuff like that.
Stuff that takes you back to a time, right?
Yeah. Takes me back to that time, man. It's not one song in particular. It's tons of songs, tons of different music, tons of different genres.
I can hear it. I can hear it right now.
Yeah.
And which, you know what I found with jazz, because like I'm so heavy in music. I've been like a music nerd my entire life. You know, like I know all the obscure artists, you know, all the one hit wonders. I know who wrote the song, who played the drums, just how I am. And then when I became a producer and I was sampling and I'd be going through all this music looking for samples, I have intentionally stayed away from jazz my entire life. And here's why. It's because I know I want to be in the right mindset to appreciate it, right? Yeah. And I have all this other music that when I run through it and I'm tired of it, I get jazz. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I'm going to explore that the same way. And it's like, and I'm just looking forward to that day. I'm the same way with classical music too. I was reading today something about classical music. Like 95% of the classical music that we hear is from five artists. And of those five artists, we only hear like their top 3% of their songs, right?
Yeah.
So much classical music never got heard. You know what I mean? Like, it's this small amount of people are responsible for so much in the world, like an entire genre right now. So I thought that was pretty dope. So Kemp, man, this has been great. I wanna leave the floor open to you for anything, man. Any messages, if you have anything coming up, anything, any parting words that you have, brother, I want to leave the floor open for you. So.
All right. Well, yeah, actually, man, you know, I've been thinking about what we're going to do this coming year, man. And we're still going to do Thanksgiving and Christmas. We're still going to do the Breast Cancer Awareness Month stuff. I want to do something different. A few years ago, I helped a group do a back to school bash.
Okay.
And now that we're getting ready to come back to school, it might look a little different. We don't know exactly how it's going to look. Now that they're starting to open stuff back up, I've been reaching out to people because I want to do that back to school thing.
Okay.
I want to give out those school supplies. I want people to be able to come down with their kids and, you know, if we're back to the point to where we can put kids in bounce houses again, I want to have bounce houses for them to come out to. You know, if we can feed them some hot dogs and hamburgers, I want to be able to do that. I want us to get back to being people instead of being scared.
No doubt.
So I'm working on bringing that back, you know, and I reach out to some of the local barbers and, you know, the bowling alley and Great Clips last couple of years, man, we've teamed up with Watson's. I reached out to Prestige this year and we did free haircuts. We're going to do that again this year. I want to tie that into the Christmas baskets. And then we also do it again around Christmas time. I mean, I want to tie that into the back to school bash, and we also do it at Christmas. So I'm want to bring that back to the table. I'm working on some mentoring programs with some of our youth. So we're going to bring that back. So it's going to be a busy year for me again. So I'm kind of coasting through the holidays and all these recent deaths and stuff. And,
yeah.
You know.
Getting through this pandemic. Golly. Well, you know, let me say this, though. You know, y'all, I own Yardie. Me and my boys, we have Yardie, which is a yard sign company, you know what I mean, which allows us to do messages. So if you ever need us, we're pulling up, you know. So just put that on the table, man. So, Kip, man, again, this has been great. You're a superhero in our community, man, and I thank you. Keep rocking, keep pushing. You know, we're all behind you, brother. So we see you, we recognize you, we appreciate you, bro. So thanks for coming on Deeply Rooted. Yeah, that's it.
All right, brother. Hey, thank you for bringing me on, man, and I'm ready for part two whenever.
No doubt. It was my pleasure, homie. You enjoy the rest of your night, bro.
You too, man.
All right.
All right. Bye-bye.